You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Tim Horaney, not only did we get a really good race on a really good race course that you'd almost forgotten how good Shanghai is. We've got some really good news. Gunther Steiner this week on Nailing the Apex. First off, Tim, I got to say, so behind the scenes, Tim was like, hey, what do you think about getting Gunther on? I was like, yeah, obviously that'd be amazing. And then you just did it. So he's going to be on Thursday morning. Mm-hmm. So you'll get the podcast Thursday afternoon. But Tim, like, can I ask how? How'd you do that? Do you just have his number? You're like, yo, G.
Pulled some strings out of my... Known Gunther for a little while, so
that's pretty cool. Come on.
Yeah. No, it's great. I mean, essentially a close buddy of mine reached out to him. They kind of set the wheels in motion, and yeah, Gunther was happy to come on. He's going to give us, you know, an hour of his time, so it's going to be fun. We'll be able to ask him some fan questions and stuff too, so I'm sure we'll put a call out for that on SDPN. And yeah, it's going to be fun, man. I'm looking forward to it. Because we had Gunther on last year, right? And he was great.
Oh, yeah. So.
He was great.
You know, that was under the you know, that was part of his promotion for his book, right?
Yes.
So yeah, so this year, it's just because. Like, he doesn't have a book. Well, he is re-releasing it. I know there's a new chapter, which I'm upset about because I don't get access to the new chapter because I bought the old book. So I'm going to give him hell for that. No, I'm kidding. But if you have any questions, make sure you tweet us, because I think there'd be a lot of questions. And I think there's going to be a lot about Haas. But I think he has already sort of said what he needs to say about that. And my question, Tim, is what's in the future for this guy? He's a smart man.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think because of his – you know, brand ambassador role with the Miami GP. I mean, that's definitely opened some doors for him. And then obviously, you know, when I was in Bahrain running into him and chatting with him quickly when he was doing the TV gig there. So I'll be curious to know what he thinks his future looks like moving forward. I think like once you kind of get into like the media side of the sport, sometimes you don't necessarily have the ability to kind of go back to the other part of the sport, if that makes any sense. So mm-hmm. I'll be curious. That's going to be one of my questions for him, is kind of like, if he's able to go back, how can he do that? How can he kind of make that sort of happen? And I'll be curious to know if he's making another book, to be honest with you, because his one book, Adam, like you'd mentioned there, I mean, it's really great. And I would go out and buy another copy if he were to write something else.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Me too. I loved that book. And what I loved about it is it's his signature sense of humor. And he took the time, and I'm an audiobook listener, so mm-hmm. he took the time to do the audiobook. And I really appreciate it. So you have to hear the whole thing in his voice with his accent.
Yeah.
You know, and the, you know, the jokes delivered in the way that only he can, right? Because he's got there, some of the things he says, I'm like, this wouldn't be funny if it wasn't him. You know?
Yeah, and, totally agree with you.
That's why he's so special as a personality. And I think he's one of those guys, much like a Daniel Ricciardo, much like obviously far lesser degree, these guys in comparison to like a Lewis Hamilton or Fernando Alonso, but they're big personalities that are going to sell the sport even when they're done.
Yeah, for sure.
And Gunther is, I think, that guy. I think media is perfect for him. He's done enough of the racing and the grind. Just come join us on the media side. It's fun over here.
I kind of also want to talk to him a bit about, before we get into the Chinese Grand Prix here, I want to kind of talk to him a bit about travel. Like the amount of travel that guy did and like how he did it, right? Because he wasn't always stationed in Europe. Like, he was coming from the United States, flying to a venue in Europe, then flying to another venue in Europe, then maybe going to like China, Japan, wherever, mm-hmm. and then flying back to the States, spending like a couple days at home, and then flying back out again. So kind of want to get a better understanding of how that travel worked for him, because I have talked to him about it in the past, and I never really got to get into it with him. So definitely looking forward to Thursday. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, man. Well, I'm really appreciative that you booked it, because this is going to be a dream come true. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have a good time. Now, Tim, we had a real good race.
We did.
Real good race. I thought, first off, did you, in North America where we're recording this, the race start time, I believe, was 3 a.m. Were you watching it live?
I was. Yeah, I was.
Just another week of tired Tim, huh? Yeah.
I don't know if like people will care, but like essentially the way I kind of worked this out was the first day. So for practice, so essentially what I did was watched FP1, fell asleep for a couple hours, woke up, watched the sprint quali, slept for a couple hours, woke up at 6:30 a.m., went to do this workout thing that I do on Friday mornings at 7 a.m. and then came back, stayed up until the next day, and then slept for 6 hours. And then I did the same thing that I did with the practice going into the race. I basically went to bed around 10:30, woke up around 1:30 a.m., did the thing, went to bed at 7 a.m., woke up at 11 a.m., and I've been up sort of ever since. So
are you in bed after this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay, right. So listen, we're going to make the show fun and easy, okay? We're going to have fun together.
It's always fun, Adam. We're always having a good time on here, dude.
Listen, a good time. You know what? When I was doing mornings, it was, I don't know if it's the same, but you get so chronically tired that it just throws your whole life off. And sometimes even, you know, taking naps, and I know we're digressing, we'll get into the actual show in a sec. I don't know if you ever do this, but I used to like wake up with existential dread. Like I'd take a nap from say 2 to 3 in the afternoon. I'd wake up and I'd go, am I the worst person on the face of the earth? I'm horrible. I have no talent. I have this, I have that. It's brutal.
Oh yeah. Brutal. Oh yeah. Horrible. I mean, like I was saying the last time I had to do this type of a shift. I mean, it was for, I guess it was Japan, but then before that, Australia. I think I'd said on the pod, like, you know, I take my hat off to those of you who have to work shift work. Like that's good for you. I mean, I don't know how you do it, but wow, that's incredible.
Well, and it's like police officers and nurses and firefighters. And like, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, 5 days normal. And then, oh, here's a 4 day shift where you're doing evenings. And then, okay. And then you're going to do a 7 day shift where you're overnight. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's what my mom, like, and my mom had to do that too. So like, I was like talking to her about, I don't know how she did it either. Like, cause she was a nurse. So I don't know how she was able to pull that off. Like,
how many kids in the family, Tim?
Just got an older brother.
An older brother.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, now who was trouble? You or your older brother?
I don't know. Like, if you ask him, like, he'd probably say maybe it was me, but I don't know. Like, I kind of like sometimes looked at what my brother did, and I'm like, yeah, I don't want to do that.
Okay,
because I don't want to get in trouble.
So he's the blueprint. Okay,
I think both of us, I think were, you know, got into trouble quite often. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, you know, country roads, fast cars. Come on.
Yeah.
What was your car again? The car you delivered pizzas with?
Oh man, I had a Mazda 1987 Mazda 626.
Yes, delicious. Man,
heat.
No heat in the winter. Well, the pizzas kept you warm. So listen, we had a great, I feel like this was a good race. I feel like this was a solid race, start to finish. And the thing I think I liked the most about it was, you know, I think Nico Rosberg made a really good point on Sky Sports F1. And I'm not sure if you were watching the TSN feed where it picks that up, or the F1 feed. But, you know, Nico Rosberg said you kind of have to look at this season. Or was it Karun Shandok? Either way, they said you have to look at this season kind of like last year, where you're of two minds. First off, Max is going to win or has a pretty good chance at winning. Number two, the racing behind him is really, really, really good. Yeah. And we always talk about you're witnessing. So you get to witness greatness, which is Max Verstappen, mistake-free driving all weekend long. I'm sorry, but that is so impressive. It's so impressive what he's doing. Because you look down the rows a little bit to Sergio Perez, who's got the same car, all the same opportunities, and they had a front row lockout, and Perez had a really rough start because he's human and he makes mistakes. He's not like the, you know, the Verstappen bot just rolling through everything. And so what I loved about today's race was the fact that we had an accordion all the way through. You had guys running all different types of tires. You had great battles for like 14th and 15th. You had great drama afterwards with drivers sniping at each other. And yes, we will talk about Stroll and Ricciardo. You had team principals sniping at each other, Toto Wolff and Christian Horner. Vintage stuff. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. But let's start with Max. Tim, what did you like about Max's race today?
Oh, man. Yeah, that guy's just on another level, Adam. I mean, it's a driver. I think I don't know how much more like things we can throw at just how good he is, but just at the peak of his performance, driving the best car on the grid.
Yeah.
And
Rosberg, you know, even said that. He's like, I got to ask him questions, but like, what am I going to ask him?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I heard that. Yeah. And you know what? Nico's, I don't always really agree with what Rosberg says, but
yeah, he says some wild shit. Let's be honest.
Yeah. I agree. I agree with that. Like, I don't know what else you can. You know, because he did that. Just the driver car combo is unbelievable. If you know, same breath that like Schumacher, Ferrari, Hamilton, Mercedes, like insert great driver with great team and great car, and that's what we're talking about here. And so it's really hard to pick apart his performance because there is no flaws, Adam. I mean, he was so far ahead of Sergio Perez in qualifying, and they both have the same car.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Like, oh my God! Like,
and what he won the sprint race by what, 13 seconds? And
yeah,
they were just testing things out.
Like, what? I mean, the gap obviously wasn't. And granted, there were safety car interruptions in this race, Adam. But like the gaps in the race were a little bit different. He wasn't pulling like a huge gap on everybody. Like, it was enough, and it was a big one. And Perez, obviously, you know, unable to bring the car home in P2, and if you want to get into that, we can. But mm-hmm. I think at the end of the day, Adam, it's just like, you know, driver at its peak, car at its best, and the right track as well. And you know, this is what you get, right?
Yeah, I you know, and I think that's what's so exciting about Max Verstappen still for me is that every time he races, it's like we're all waiting. The entire grid is waiting on him to make a mistake, and he just doesn't. Mm-hmm. And then he gets out of the car, and he's nonchalant, and he's talking to everybody in the room afterwards when they're, you know, in the podium room when they're all putting their hats on and having a drink of water. It's like it's just automatic in a way that, I mean, Lewis was pretty relaxed when he was winning races like this too. I guess there's a way that you get to where you almost get used to being great, but they are constantly trying to get the best out of that car. They don't stop, which I really respect.
And just everything like happens behind him. And granted, like we throw Sergio Perez into this mix, same car, same everything. Mm-hmm. And you just see the smallest, little tiniest of mistakes, even from a driver as good as Sergio Perez, and still just Max able to just blow everything wide open. I mean, Sergio losing P2 to Fernando Alonso, mm-hmm. you know, off the hop, really, at the start of this race, there is such a domino effect to that that, you know, you tend to get into it even deeper. And you can really see how Sergio was so affected just by that. Like, he mm-hmm. was losing, you know, almost 5/10 in that first sort of stint before they pitted. And that was just enough. You know, Max opened up that gap so much that Sergio came back out, overtaken, safety car. Mm-hmm. They both double stack again, comes out, and now he's in fourth. And all of that just because he loses P2 to Fernando Alonso off the hop. Like it,
and a pretty consequential move for Fernando Alonso too, because I think Fernando holding on to P2 as long as he did off the top of the race, not only does that delay Perez, but it ultimately delays Fernando before his first tire change, and we can talk about that a little bit later. You know, the fact that they went on the softs mid race was kind of ended up being a bit of a disaster for them. But by doing that, he burnt out his tires a little bit mm-hmm. faster, and so did Perez, which mm-hmm. allowed Lando Norris, who'd had a really good start, to grab P2 and really never let go. There's another guy that did, you know, first off, he does a one pit strategy, which nobody thought was going to happen today. Secondly, I didn't see any mistakes. This is a guy that we expected McLaren to not be that great. Internally, McLaren's expectations were not that high. He comes in, he manages those problematic slow speed corners, which and that, you know, that S right after turn one, it's very clear that he managed those right. And then he managed his tires in like a Fernando Alonso type way. There was a real art to it. And I think, Tim, because he's P2, unless you're a McLaren fan like myself, maybe you're not as excited about, I got my McLaren shirt on. maybe you're not as excited about it, or you don't get, but what do you think Norris did that people really don't recognize, right? Because this guy has had, I think he's finished P2 seven of the last 18 races. This guy is spectacular.
He was great. He was great, man. Like, honestly, really, really, really great. I mean, you and I had touched on this, you know, many pods ago, and we touched on it again coming into our pre-race look ahead for the Chinese Grand Prix. And, you know, the team, like you said, you know, not really sure what was going to happen in China. They felt that this was going to be more of a damage limitation track for them. And that, that's what they kept saying, right? They kept telling us that. I honestly think, in hearing from the team afterwards, it, you know, they, it still sounds sort of like they weren't really sure why they were so competitive like this, this weekend. And
great.
Even if there was no like safety car for this race, I really think McLaren had the better car than Ferrari. And I think Norris would have been able to battle for that P2, P3 spot in this race. If no safety car, I think it should have been Verstappen, Perez. And I tweeted, you know, that out for my pre-race top three predictions, but the car looks strong. It looks way stronger even than when they were in Japan, and they were like quick in sector one in Japan, but struggled a bit in the slower speed. So corners now here, you know, really strong, just all over in the slower, longer corners, where the team was really afraid of losing time. So I think this is just a really good moment for McLaren, Adam. If you know, they've really started to come around, and they've made slow incremental gains. It's paid off, like, huge for them. Now, you know, they have upgrades coming to Miami. So, you know, McLaren really looks to have gained a load of momentum here. Lando Norris, you know, still really believes that they are going to be able to get a win this season. So far, you know, that trajectory is playing out the way that Andrea Stella and company wanted it to, Adam. Just this sort of slow progression to start gaining that performance and bringing the teams that were ahead of them back to them. And so this was, I think, a huge turning point for them in the season.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I agree. And you know what I think is the most telling part, at least about the car, Tim, is Oscar Piastri sustained damage early.
Yeah.
It was not like widely reported, and he was able to manage what he managed. He was able to still duel with George Russell and Lewis Hamilton. And Lewis, who had a really good race, by the way, we'll talk about that too. There's a lot of stories in this race. This is like, you can go deep on this one.
Dude, there's so many.
Piastri being able to manage that is pretty spectacular. You know, for a sophomore driver to finish top 10 after sustaining pretty serious damage off the start, serious enough that it would affect the performance of the car, that is. It's not serious enough that he got to retire it. It's pretty spectacular weekend for McLaren. And I wonder if there's any hesitancy to even bring these upgrades in Miami, Tim, because as we saw with Aston Martin last year, as we saw with Haas last year, Haas is a bit of a different story. We all understand that. But, you know, sometimes you upgrade a car and it's not an upgrade.
Yeah, sometimes it goes the opposite direction, right? Sometimes it kind of takes away a lot of your strengths and you're screwed, really.
Yeah.
I think, but the thing is with McLaren, though, Adam, you know, since last year, they have such a strong record of really capitalizing on their upgrades. They've never really introduced an upgrade that didn't work. And it's almost like that, even though they got such a slow start to this season, in terms of having a strong car, having a strong package, they've managed to understand what they've been able to bring to the start of the season, and now they're starting to build upon it. And it's similar to what they did last year. I mean, last year they were starting in such a brutal place that, you know, the makeup of it, though, Adam, was just so great. I mean, now we're talking about those incremental gains that I always talk about. So they're looking for tenths, and they're looking for that within the race and in the time that the car is set up in race condition. And so for them to start bringing, say, an upgrade coming from the UK, going to Miami, they must really believe in what they've got, that it's going to work for them to do that. Because if you look at Ferrari, they have a massive upgrade coming, and they decided to put it off until Imola, so a little bit later, but you're keeping it within that European leg. So you're keeping it, you know, obviously in Italy, and Ferrari's making everything in Italy, so it's easier to get the components and make sure both cars are being upgraded at the same time. But that being said, I mean, McLaren must feel very confident in what they have here, Adam, to bring something big to Miami.
Let's talk about Fernando Alonso for a second, because as we mentioned, you know, he goes out, he gets ahead of Perez right off the start. Tip, just vintage Fernando Alonso maneuvering. He was so good. But here's the thing, Tim. He stays out a little bit too long ahead of Perez, right? And then the tires are a little worn down. And then eventually, midway through the race, he has to go do a change. And that, I believe, happened after the first safety car. Am I correct on that?
I'm trying to remember exactly when Fernando had pitted. I didn't write down the exact lap, but I believe it was before the safety car had come out.
Right. And then he has double safety cars over that time, and everybody's changing. And instead of it costing 24 seconds, it's costing these guys 15 seconds. That's where Lando got in, right? And so a bit of a disaster for Aston Martin on that side, because sometimes you run into bad luck. Would you call that a bad strategy call, or would you just call it bad luck?
No, you know, I was when I was watching it in the moment, like, it is what it is. What I was questioning was when the team decided to bring him in for that soft tire compound later in the race, when it was kind of like, hold on a second, why are you bringing him in for soft, like a soft compound, like a fresh soft compound? Like, that's not going to last until the end of the race. Like, so why even bother doing that, right? So I think he ran about three stops, and that's just, you know, I think they're also kind of lucky he finished P7, because I think this was a car on the day that was probably P8, P9. Like, that's what the Aston Martin was on Sunday. And then go to find out that, you know, Fernando just didn't really have any tires left. It was the soft or the medium, and neither one of them was going to get that full distance from when they had brought him in. So it was, let's just throw a couple Hail Marys here and see what works out. And they're able to gain one position off of it. And that comes down to, you know, just Alonso and, you know, God mode, Adam. It was activated.
He's so unbelievable. It's crazy. Like, and I want to do a particular shout out for the end, because when he did come charging out after the medium tire change and getting up to P7, He's behind Lewis Hamilton, and we love a Lewis Alonso battle, but unfortunately this one wasn't that exciting. But he made it exciting by catching gravel in the last turn right before the straightaway. And they did the slow-mo of him catching that car and riding that car within an instant. But Tim, what freaking blew my mind wasn't just what he did with the steering wheel. He immediately opens the wing and has DRS ready to go. Like he writes the car, DRS too. He's a robot. It's crazy.
Honestly, like I tweeted this out and I almost like crapped my pants when I saw it. But when that happened, Adam, he was almost pointed 90 degrees at the wall. And somehow he was able to bring the car back. I honestly thought that was it. It would kind of reminded me of what happened with Carlos Sainz during qualifying for this event. He was unbelievable. I think he tweeted out. Oh, if you go and look at his Instagram story, I was clicking through it. It was a picture of his onboard camera. Okay. He was following Lewis, and it was at the same part. I think it was a lap earlier, and he writes, "Fine." And then the next story has him pointed like this way, onboard camera, all crossed up. He writes, "Not
oh,
fine."
Oh no, he wrote "fun."
Oh, so fun. He wrote, that's fun.
And then he wrote, "Not fun."
Yeah, he's all crossed up. I'm like, oh my god, this guy is an animal. Like, there's just not enough. Again, the same thing, you know, with Verstappen and everything. There's not enough, you know, really great things to say about this guy. One thing that I really noticed that, you know, not a lot of the other drivers were doing was on that formation lap. So at the start of the race, he was working the hell out of the medium tire. Like, he was just working it, man, like, to get as much temperature into those things as he could. And just that's how he was able to get Perez off the start, right? He had just worked the tire so much that it was activated and ready to roll. But he had done it so well that I went back and watched, and you know, I thought he was going to get, you know, Verstappen in the first few corners, and he was close. But again, I mean, it's Verstappen in that car of the Red Bull is incredible. But to have the experience and the knowledge and to know what you're doing in that moment, because there's a fine line where you can really cook that tire and just destroy it. Mm-hmm. And he worked the hell out of that thing, man. And just that was enough. And, you know, that is a car, like I had said, it didn't deserve to be where it was, but he put it there. Like, he put that thing into P2. He put that thing into P3 for a while. And then, you know, whatever it was, lap 7 started to drop back, obviously, because of so much tire wear that he had absorbed. But he had to take a risk, right? And it's at the end of the day, man, it kind of paid off because he actually finished higher up than a lot of us thought he was going
to. Yeah, and you know what? He probably, without that decision to go softs, I bet he probably finishes higher. You know, if he'd gone hard, I wonder if he just stays in the race and he's wherever he is. You know what I mean? It's hard to know.
I just don't know if there was enough life left in that. That's the risk, right? I just don't know if there was enough life left in that hard tire compound.
Right.
Okay. And then switching over to either a medium or a soft, like, it just doesn't sound like either one of those tires were going to be optimal and they were going to last. Like, it just...
Right.
At some point, he was taking 3 stops. Like, that's just the way it kind of looked for him.
Well, kudos to him. As we always say, Fernando's just, he's a legend. He's amazing. Now, there were a few things that happened, a few race incidents. One of them is the minor one. I'm going to lead with that, which they tell you not to do in media. But the big one is obviously Ricardo Stroll, and we'll get to it. One of the craziest, this is where, okay, so when I talk on the Steve Dangle podcast, we talk about hockey players and it's like brain farts per 60, as in like how many stupid decisions does a player make that is like just an unforced error throughout 60 minutes of hockey, right? Kevin Magnussen, to me, is the absolute leader of brain farts per race. What he did trying to get aggressive with Yuki Tsunoda at that point was, to me, all the reasons, it sums up Magnussen's career as a driver, because you know he's really good, because you know he's really aggressive. People like that. But he just occasionally goes, I'm going to do something stupid. And you know, it torched Tsunoda's race, and it kind of torched his too. And yep. It's just, it's hard to know Tim as a non-racer, what he hoped to gain from that. And I was wondering if you could shed some light on it.
I don't even know what he was looking to get from that one, Adam. I mean, ended up coming home, whatever it was, P16 at the end of this one, in a car that had been, you know, fairly upgraded. I mean, the Haas brought, you know, a fairly big update for this weekend. And that's something actually I want to touch on in a minute, but I still would like to know what he was thinking when he decided to try and pull off that pass on Yuki Tsunoda, because there was no way that was happening.
Right.
There was just no way. Like, you could see it, like, even watching the replay on it, it's just like, you're kind of wondering, like, what was the objective there?
Dude, slower it looks, like, the slower they made it, the worse it looks.
It like, does. Just, that's true. That's true.
And I don't know. I don't get it. I didn't get it.
It's tough too, right? For that team. I mean, Hulkenberg doing, you know, a fine job in scoring P10.
Yeah.
And he was quick all weekend long. Like, Nico was very quick, where Kevin was a little up and down. And I think like Kevin's been doing a fine job this season. I think there have been some questionable decisions on his part, like one of them obviously being in Jeddah, but then again, being a good team player and helping the team score that one point in Jeddah. And then this time, you know, coming down on Yuki like he had done, I just sometimes you have to wonder if it's just that brain fade, red mist, whatever it is, man.
Whatever
just,
it is.
He's thinking that I'm getting this and that's all there is to it. I mean, fair enough. You know what? We tend to, lately tend to seeing drivers not being so aggressive anymore in fear of getting penalties and things of that nature. So, you know, sometimes I'm cool with hard racing, like good hard racing. Mm-hmm. And I think at one point, you know, Lance and Kevin had actually, that was good hard racing when those two guys were going at it towards the end of the race, even though obviously it's not for points or anything, they were still battling. But, that being said, you know, I think for Haas, though, because we just don't talk about them enough. And I think, you know, this little moment here is a good moment to put this in there. You know, they've gone obviously in another direction than other teams in terms of how they implement their upgrades. You know, they brought a sizable one to this track this weekend. They bring upgrades to tracks that you don't normally bring them to. It's a risk taking a big upgrade to a sprint weekend where you can accumulate a lot of damage. You're actually not getting the full understanding of what you've got underneath you because you're not getting all the practice sessions and the proper amount of data. But they're just not waiting around, which is kind of nice because in the past, that's something that this team would do. They would wait. Like sometimes they would wait until... Oh man, I remember one year they waited until the summer break, like the race before, to bring a big upgrade to their car. And now, you know, it looks like it's a lot more aggressive, that update schedule. And, you know, that's what I had said at the beginning of the season, that this team really needed to change, was its approach to how it brought upgrades to the team. And I think, Adam, like if they're able to kind of keep that going, and they're going to have to because it's going to be such a competitive season, they're going to have to start doing things like this, like bringing upgrades to tracks where teams aren't normally bringing them just so they can try and get that little tiny leg up just to score that one point.
And it did make a difference. I mean, they are now 5 points up on their closest competitors who have zero. There are 2 points now behind Racing Bulls, who had a disastrous weekend. Who I think look to be in line for points, maybe. Probably actually, you know, Ricardo, and we'll get to him in a second, probably finishes 10th if he's in, right? I think he was, you know, 10th or 11th, like right in with Hulkenberg. It's going to be a race between those two teams.
Yeah.
And by the way, it was a good race weekend for Daniel Ricardo. This is a guy that was under fire. We were talking about this last week. Yep. Daniel Ricciardo was under huge fire, and he should have been. You know, you need to get results at some point. Out qualifies Yuki, out sprints Yuki, and out races Yuki until both of them are booted off the track. And I thought Ricciardo, who has, you know, I know it had to do with pit stops, but he was as high as seventh place. Looked really good in the car.
No, he looked, Ricardo looked fantastic, man. It's you know, obviously this is racing and that sucks. It sucks what happened with him this weekend, you know, getting the new chassis, obviously. I mean, now technically, do we really know that that's what's brought Daniel sort of back to life here? I mean, we don't. Will the team know? Yeah, they will and they won't, right? I think coming into it, they weren't convinced that it was going to do much and that it was basically down to Daniel to sort of figure it out and get himself sort of back into things. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Carlos Sainz back in 2022, and he had a awful start to that season. It was so bad, dude. I don't think he scored a point for the first like five or six races or something. Like, it was ridiculous. But yeah, it was it kind of reminded me of that, where it's got off to a really rough start, but eventually was managed to figure it out and come back. And I think this is honestly, I really think this is what's going to happen with Daniel, to be perfectly honest with you. I literally think that it was a good weekend, and I think that was enough to help him understand that he now knows what direction he needs to go in with the car and how to kind of extract the performance.
Now, he was heated after the race, and you know, the reporters, I think, egged him on a little bit, but they gave him a full context and told him what Lance had said in his radio message. Now, you got to remember something. When you're watching these radio messages, the drivers can't see everything, and they're pretty amped up. Pretty testosterone-y, as my mom would call it. Like, you're just jacked. You're just ready to fight. And so, so what happens is they're in a safety car. They're under safety car, excuse
yeah,
me.
Yeah, you want me to paint the picture?
Please give
one?
It to me. Cause,
okay, all right.
And then you got to explain some of this stuff, because I've got some questions.
Okay. Let me go into as much detail as I've got here, because I made some notes on it, because I figured it would need some explanation. So we'll go to that restart with Stroll and Ricardo. So Verstappen is backing up the pack heading into the hairpin. Leclerc, if you go back and you watch this, Leclerc slows up. Perez is right on his ass. Mm-hmm. And then there's a gap between Sainz, who is closing up to Perez quickly, and Alonso. Now, it looks like Fernando may have just missed judge the speed to which, you know, everyone was going in front of him. He locks up. He almost takes himself and Sainz out of the race, but luckily he just misses Carlos. Now, George Russell and Oscar Piastri, they also get extremely close to Alonso, almost clobbering into the back of him because of what was happening in front of Fernando. And that starts this accordion effect, each car getting closer and closer to the car in front of them, and that last one on the scene is always the one who pays the price. And Lance goes into the back of Ricardo, who was literally a whisker away from going into the arse end of Oscar Piastri anyways. So I think all the drivers did their best to try and avoid this. I mean, Stroll appears to be looking at the apex of the corner, so of the hairpin on this restart. Now, you know, because you're trusting the cars in front to handle the restart, and goes right into the back of Daniel. So I think for Ricardo getting upset, you know, you had kind of mentioned it a bit with the reporters. So post race, because I think what happened, Adam, is a journalist had put Lance's radio message to Ricardo in the pen.
Yeah, a Canal Plus.
Is that who it was? Okay, yeah. So I've listened to Lance's on board several times, and it sounds like Lance says these idiots just slammed on the brakes, referencing that everyone accordion affected. But the way I think it's put to Ricardo in the pen, I believe, is quote, you know, this idiot. So referencing it being Ricardo's fault, just, and that sets, you know, Daniel off, right? Like, that's going to really irk him right now. If you go back and you look at F1 on their YouTube channel, you can see Lance's post he even says in that that it's like, you know, the guy's up in front. So he's referencing everybody who was in front of him, just backing everything up. Now, was there anything that Stroll could have done to avoid this? Well, I mean, like, everyone is going to have their opinion. And the fact is, you know, Adam, we're not in the car. So yep. we'll just never know. So, but if you go through the incident frame by frame, there is a moment that he may have been able to dart out of the way. And mm-hmm. that's the moment that he's looking towards the apex. But you can't, like, leave the line because you can't overtake at that moment. He would have gotten a penalty. And you don't want to be tight to the hairpin apex, like at mm-hmm. early on, because of the amount of understeer that you would get from that on the exit, and you just get overtaken by everyone. So everyone mm-hmm. checks up, and boom, we get the collision. Stroll has to pit for new tires. That sends him to the back, and then the stewards also slap him with a 10-second time penalty, which he serves. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point, that may have been a little bit too harsh, because he's already at that moment, he's already at the ass end of the grid. I mean, at yep. the ass end of the pack. Like, it, I don't know.
I think it was, I mean, it does seem like there's, you know, the Carlos Sainz part of it is sort of a big deal that people are ignoring. And then the Fernando part of it and all that, you know, there was that sort of effect that happens. But I think, you know, I'll be honest with you. I don't understand a lot of the penalties that the stewards give out. So sometimes I'm like, oh, that'll be a 10-second penalty, and then it'll just be nothing, or, you know. So
yeah, well, I don't know how Bahrain, they judge things. Like, Adam, if you go back to Bahrain, yeah. Stroll got taken out at the start, like yep. clearly taken out, but there was no penalty levied to, I believe it was Hulkenberg who had hit him, but there was no penalty levied to Hulkenberg.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So it's difficult.
Sorry to cut you off.
It's fine.
I think like one of the issues with it is the consistency at which race stewards are involved in these races, where it's like you're not getting the same stewards every single time. If you watch like IndyCar, you're getting the same stewards every single race. So you, as a driver, kind of understand how you can race other drivers. It's kind of, you know, it's like basketball, it's like hockey. Once you kind of understand who the refs are, the officials are, then you know how you can play the game in that particular game. Mm-hmm. For this, it's different because you're kind of always almost getting someone new every different race that you're going to. So that consistency isn't there either. So I think at the same time, if you're a driver, you're kind of losing that. Well, can I do this? Can I not do this? Because if you look at, like, Did you watch the sprint, right?
Yep.
The race between, towards the end, the race between Alonso and Sainz, was that penalty worthy? Because Alonso ended up getting a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And he seems to get a lot of penalties that are questionable. But you know, at the end of the day, Tim, here's what I know. I know that Lance Stroll and Daniel Ricciardo are pretty friendly off track. Or at least they have been in the past. Like, I'm pretty yep. sure that, you know, Ricardo was at a Stroll family wedding. So
yeah, I think it's something they'll smooth over, the two of them.
Yeah.
To be perfectly yeah. honest with you, I don't see this going any further than what it's already come to. That's just my view on it, to be honest with you. So
it's just you're amped up and you get shit to say. You know, you're mad, and I don't blame either of them for being mad. I'm sure Stroll was pissed, and Ricardo especially needed this. And I mean, to have this happen, it's like, for God's sakes.
Sucks for both of them, right? Like, I think, like, for Ricardo, he definitely needed it. So did Stroll, right? He was having a great race, too. They both were having really strong races. Both of them needed it, right? Both of them needed a good result. What I was a bit confused by, and something that people haven't really touched on just yet, was just the fact that why the stewards didn't investigate the slow up at the hairpin that almost led to a 5-6 car pileup.
I'm 100% with you. I think you're absolutely right. Should have been looked at.
I think so. I think it at least should have been noted, but it wasn't even noted. So I found that a little strange.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. When you go back and you look at the whole thing. Now, the last thing I want to hit, because I want to get you to bed. Because I feel for you, because I know how long these weekends are for you.
Just the way you said that.
Well, I do. Listen, I'm a dad. You know, I still care about this stuff. And I'm somebody, too, that values sleep. Like, I don't mess with my sleep. That's my one thing. People don't understand it.
If you're not a big sleeper,
you don't get it. But, like, I need to sleep. Otherwise, I cannot function properly. So just
run on exhaustion, baby. Woo!
I know. Well, you can only do it for so long, Tim, and then you start to crash. Now, so let's talk about the last thing, which is Christian Horner and Toto Wolff. And, you know, Toto did make some comments, I think, on Wednesday or Thursday about potentially, you know, people are always going to ask him about Max. And Christian Horner fired back today and said, and this was true before the race, but it is no longer true because Mercedes are now in fourth place. But he said something to the effect of Toto should maybe focus on his race car because his two clients are ahead of him right now. And you know, Lewis had a good weekend. He got some good points in the sprint race, coming second, love seeing that. And then comes from 18th. And finishes, you know, what was it, 8, 9?
Russell was P6 and Hamilton was P9.
And for what the car is, and it's not great, that's pretty good racing. Like, Lewis Hamilton deserves some flowers today.
Yeah. Yeah.
But before we get to Lewis, I just want to say, I love it when Christian and Toto are going at it.
It's always
There's
good
nothing
TV,
better.
Man.
It's the best.
It's always good. Yeah, it's the best. Awesome.
And I know when they're shaking hands in the paddock, they're like, you know, it's like that Michael Jordan to Larry Bird, like F-U-U-B word, you know. Try not to swear too much here. But let's, I mean, we could talk about that rivalry if you want to, Tim, or do you want to talk about Lewis Hamilton?
Toto and Christian, they've got their relationship, right? And it is what it is. I mean, sometimes they're quite cordial with each other, and when things get really heated and competitive, sometimes they're not, right? They're two competitive, you know, guys who want to win. So it happens. Like, I always appreciate, like, their one-liners towards each other.
Oh, though. They're good.
They're always really solid, and they all seem to really, it's always like a direct hit. It's almost like they take a couple days before they head into a Grand Prix and they think about, if Christian says this or if Toto says this, this is my line. They've got it ready to go.
Yes, it's ready. And Lewis is driving this weekend. Obviously, he didn't love the car setup. Second place, though, in the sprint race, 18th to 9th in the real race. I mean, it's kind of getting overlooked, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think since we had the new Parc Fermé rules in between the sprint race and the qualifying for the Grand Prix, Mercedes doing similar things to what Ferrari did in tweaking their setups, Adam, because like Ferrari had gone in a different direction with their setup for Charles Leclerc in particular, following the sprint race and then heading into qualifying, and that's kind of hurt their weekend. For Hamilton in particular, really, you know, just deciding to take the car in a different setup window. And that really bit him. It really hurt his qualifying, sending him back to the rears. He recovered well, like you said, with the race, but still, like, even in the race, it looked like a struggle. The team obviously is not happy with the step forward that they wanted to take with this car. Now you go back a few races. It looked like they had gotten a good understanding with this car and what their struggles were. Struggling in high speed corners, strong and slow to medium speed corners. So, you know, they really leaned into that for Japan, mm-hmm. like really leaning into that strength of medium speed corners. They went after that. And then come to China, they've chased that medium speed performance, and suddenly they lose the slow speed strength.
Right.
Because of just how complex the ground effect cars are. They can't find the right compromise with corners. At the end of the day, Adam, this car, all it needs is more downforce. That's just something that George Russell has been saying since Bahrain, and he's been telling the team, I would say well before our Bahrain preseason testing, just doing things in the simulator. The car just needs more performance. And, you know, Toto Wolff mentioning this to Sky Sports at the end of this one, you know, they're bringing an upgrade to the car for Miami that looks like a step. But again, you know, we'll see how that plays out. We'll see how big of a step it is. But at the end of the day, just a car that needs just more downforce and trying to understand a bit more of that ride height structure with the car.
Right, right. Well, do you think they can figure it out? Like, is this a pre-summer break or post-summer break where Mercedes starts to improve? Because it doesn't feel as inevitable as it used to. It used to feel like this, they're going to improve and it's Mercedes and this is, you know, and they finished second place the last 2 years, right?
Yeah.
3 years, last 3 years.
I would say that, and we can always use the McLaren as the reference where it's like, if McLaren can make the jump that they made, then any team can make the jump that they make, right? And I think for Mercedes, you have such a strong technical background, they should be fine. They should be able to, you know, close down on that fight with McLaren and Ferrari. And it's all about trying to execute on those updates. And, you know, that's where you throw in Aston Martin into the mix, right, Adam? It's kind of like, what are they going to bring to the car that's going to give them that next step that's going to allow them to catch up to McLaren, which is going to allow them to catch up to Ferrari? And then what's Ferrari going to do to allow them to catch up to Red Bull? It's like we had talked about, this season is going to be such a development war. It's not even funny. Like, it's not. So that's where it's going to get really interesting. I think we're going to see even more great races this season. I mean, so far, if we look at this season compared to last season, Adam, I mean, already for me anyways, like looking at this season for me has been filled with so many great stories and good racing too. I mean, there has been a couple snoozers obviously, but not all of them can be bangers, but this one was a good one, man. I really liked this race.
Tim Horaney, I just need to know one last thing before you go to bed.
Absolutely.
How did you do on Grid Rival?
Oh man, did I ever shit the bed?
I gotta be honest, I had Ricardo. I'm like, he's due for a comeback.
299th. 200.
Ooh. Ooh. Okay, I at least moved up. I'm 56th. Holy smokes, Tim. 299th. What's going on, man?
I think I forgot to set my lineup.
Oh no. That's a problem. That's gonna be a problem.
But I thought I had everybody set for this was supposed to be the last race, but I think I had only set it for four. And
the top three, Sunhar has hung on to their spot at the top of the grid, but they went down £5 million in their picks. They had Tsunoda, Sainz, Leclerc, Stroll, and Ricciardo. So that's pretty rough to have three of those five go out. Hominator and BCG8R. Those are the top three.
Dude, Hominator's, you know, their team, like Carlos Sainz Jr., Carlos Sainz, Lando Norris, Max Verstappen, Zhou Guanyu, Nico Hülkenberg, and Racing Bulls. Obviously not getting much for Racing Bulls because of how their weekend sort of went, but this was a smart lineup, man. That was
really
smart
well played. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well,
and how about Zhou Guanyu, Adam? I mean, let's just...
Oh, yes, yes.
Man, just that was a great story. really, really happy for that guy. He, let me tell you, whenever I've talked to him, like away from the track or at the track, like just not even doing an interview, he is class, man. He's a very nice guy. Yeah, he's really great to have a chat with for sure. And like really happy to see this for him. Like he drove really well this weekend, and I hope he's able to stick around in F1 for next season. I really do.
Yeah. I think after seeing something special like that, you go, man, and he's never been given a great car, but he is he's gotten results where there haven't been many to be had.
Yeah.
So just like Valtteri, you kind of hope that they're going to be around, but there's only 20 seats. So you never know. But it was special to see a Chinese driver in China and see those fans go nuts for him when he got out. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, me too. I thought, and I was talking to some of the folks who were on the ground there, and they were just texting. I was just texting back and forth, and they were just explaining to me, like, you need to be here to see this because it's the stadium section where the garages are located across from where all the fans are. They were just telling me how loud the fans were. They couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe just how loud the crowd was. Like, they were overpowering the cars at some points, and like that has to be awesome to witness. It's got to be so cool, man.
That's amazing. That's so great to hear. The sport has grown a lot since it's been since 2019, the last time it was there. I cannot believe it's been 5 years. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I remember there were times where you would look at like a practice session and a qualifying session, and you'd wonder if there was anybody even there.
Like, well, there's a F1 photographer. I think that's that's his username on TikTok, and he's at all the races. And they asked him, you know, he's answering a bunch of questions and stuff. And the guy's been around for years, and he said, you know, China was one of his least favorite, and it was because there was nobody there. He's like, you might get 4,000 or 5,000 people excited, but but I wonder how he thought about it now, having seen it now. And I think, boy, did people seem excited?
Oh yeah, it definitely. And I, you know, obviously that's a big market to be in for sure for sports and stuff at some points.
Mm-hmm.
But that would just be a cool experience to see just that crowd and how amped up everybody was. That'd be neat.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, Tim. Well, how about we wrap it up, because we got Günther Steiner to prepare for, and it's gonna be a great week, even though we've got a couple weeks till Miami, and you, sir, are gonna go. So we're gonna do a little prepping for Miami with Tim at some point.
Yeah, we'll be there. I've got a busy 3 weeks coming up, a lot of travel coming up, but looking forward to Miami. And Adam, thanks again for doing this, man. Really appreciate it.